Revenue Service, Mr. Clark.
Oh my God.
May it please the court, the issue in this case is whether or not the IRS has a claim for a tax that is accepted from discharge in the debtor's prior Chapter 7 bankruptcy case.
Can before you even begin, can I ask you the question that's bothering me, please?
Yes.
Why wasn't the judge correct when she reasoned that their obligation to the IRS did not arise from a statutory tax levy, rather from the action of the party, such that it should be treated as an ordinary debt?
Well, it's our position that the liability that is outstanding now does arise directly under the applicable tax provisions of the Internal Revenue Code. I don't think that there's any dispute at this point, really, that the liability in question is a deficiency within the meaning of Section 6211A of the code. And it's a deficiency because, again, I think there's no dispute to the fact that this refund was a rebate within the meaning of Section 6211B of the code. And so Congress consciously considered the matter and decided that this type of refund gives rise to a tax deficiency under the Internal Revenue Code.
See, here's the way I saw it. Originally, the Frontones owed a tax, but they had paid that tax through withholding, right?
That's correct.
With the exception of the $834 balance, they didn't owe any tax, right?
Once they paid it, that's correct.
Right. So when the IRS issued the erroneous refund, that was a transaction wholly distinct from the tax, right?
We would disagree, Your Honor.
Oh, okay. I was on a roll.
Again, the legislative history shows that Congress directly considered the very situation that arose here. When enacted the Individual Income Tax Act of 1944, there's an example of legislative history. We discussed this towards the end of our reply brief. That's really directly on point. In that example, the taxpayer files a return claiming a tax liability of $600. There had been $800 that had been paid through withholding credit. Okay. The IRS looks at the return and determines that, well, no, the taxpayer made a mistake. There's only a $500 liability here. And so it refunds $300. And Congress said that the deficiency in that case is $300. So when it includes the difference between the $500 and $600, Congress specifically considered this very situation here and determined that this gives rise to a tax deficiency.
What I find a little puzzling, I understand why the government has to have a right of restitution in some of these mistaken refund cases, because they might make a mistaken refund if someone didn't owe them any taxes, right? So you have to have that. But why is it that in the case you've described as a rebate case where there is a tax deficiency, why is it that the government could also proceed under restitution theory if it wanted?
Well,
why that overlap of remedies?
Your Honor,
is that an accident or just?
It is an overlap, and I think that as a practical matter, whenever there is this type of situation where the refund does give rise to a deficiency, that the IRS would send a notice of deficiency and therefore give the taxpayer the right to go to the tax court before paying the liability, rather than bringing an erroneous refund suit where you directly collect from
so
the
So an erroneous refund, that would be a suit in the federal district court? And
Yes, that's under 7405.
Would there be a jury right for the defendant?
Would there be a jury right? I mean, I guess that gets back to common law. I mean, the Supreme Court, at least the Second Circuit, has said that erroneous refund suit is an act of restitution. Now, again, the government has an act of restitution under common law. Is that a jury question? I'm not sure of the answer to that, but I believe so. But I don't know.
Right.
I didn't
so,
know that.
But
question.
You're saying as a matter of practice, you send the deficiency notice rather than... rather than bothering with
yes, Your Honor, and this type of situation is well. I mean, It's certainly not uncommon. I mean, the most common situation is one where the taxpayer will file a tax return claiming a $1,000 tax liability and withholding credits of $1,200. And so the IRS refunds the $200. The IRS subsequently audits the return and says, well, wait a minute, you claim this deduction here, you're not entitled to. Your liability was, in fact, $1,200. You have to pay that back. Well, and that's the most common situation. And then the IRS would send a notice of deficiency because that is a deficiency within the meaning of the statute.
So the only difference here is that instead of proceeding the normal route, you're in the bankruptcy court.
We're in the bankruptcy court asserting a claim, which we think is a claim for a tax. Now, we also had this claim for restitution, but I think that it is a claim for a tax because it falls within those provisions of the Internal Revenue Code, defining a deficiency and allowing the IRS to make an assessment of the tax and collecting it as a tax.
But now you did you send them a deficiency notice? Or is that
yes,
that's one of the issues.
You
send them, or we don't know whether you sent. Or there's a question.
It's outside the record, but we informed the court that we had, just to let the court know that there's no problems with mootness here. What happened here is the IRS made a supplemental assessment under 6204, and when it was looked at further, we figured that even under 6204 supplemental assessments. You know, we're talking about deficiencies, then you're supposed to send a notice of deficiency first before making that supplemental
assessment. So you may not have sent a timely notice of deficiency. Is that what
Well, again, that's outside the record, but we informed the court to let the court know it's not the case is not moot, that in March of this year, the IRS sent this notice of deficiency.
Right.
The statute ran out in April 15th of this year.
Right.
So there's no question about moot.
Okay, so that's important, right, because it would be moot if you actually couldn't collect.
Right.
Does the record tell us if there would be fines and interest?
Well, there would always be interest. As to fines or penalties, I don't think that there's any question of that here. Okay. Now, there is a long line of Supreme Court cases which say that, you know, when you're in bankruptcy and determining priority and dischargeability of debt, you don't simply go by the label of tax placed on the indebtedness by the tax statute. You have to look behind the label to the operation of the tax provision and to the actual effects of the tax provision. And the court has defined a tax as an obligatory pecuniary burden laid upon individuals for the support of their government. Well, I think that the indebtedness we're talking about here plainly falls within that provision. I mean, the question here would concern the self-employment taxes reported on the tax return. The self-employment tax is imposed by Section 1401 of the Internal Revenue Code for the purpose of providing retirement Social Security benefits to self-employed individuals. It gives rise to deficiencies under 6211, and it's an involuntary obligatory burden that's imposed upon individuals to support the government. So I think it squarely falls within the Supreme Court's definition of a tax. Now, it is also, I prefer to save my time for rebuttal.
Okay, you may do that. Okay, thank you, Mr. Clark. Mr. Normand?
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent the Frantone family. My name is John Normand. Basically, I hope that we address these things in our brief, but I think there's a big distinction here between the IRS code and the bankruptcy code. First of all, you ask about the assessment notice that had been given, and I had written to the Department of Justice relative to this and was informed, I read from their letter, please be advised that the notice is intended to be a protective notice only and that if the United States does not ultimately prevail after the exhaustion of appeals, from the district court's order affirming the bankruptcy court's determination that the 2000 year tax was discharged in the prior 7 case, the notice of deficiency will be withdrawn. The basic situation is here, the parties filed a Chapter 7. And you get a discharge.
But your problem is that this is, your client underpaid, is in a situation of having underpaid tax, not their, your client, not their fault, wasn't their mistake. Nevertheless, they got this windfall refund, and it means they owe additional taxes. And I don't know how you get around that. They owe additional taxes. That tax claim of the government is not dischargeable.
Well, there are dischargeability provisions for tax claims. Not every tax claim is not dischargeable. For example, if my tax return has been filed, I show I owe the government $10,000 more than, and I timely file the return, and more than 3 years elapses from that April 15th, and I file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, I get a discharge. The situation here is that Chapter 7 was filed for these people. They, in fact, got a discharge. There was no objection, and in order to get a discharge objection allowed under Section 523, you've got to meet certain tests.
But see, in that case, the government can't collect the money. You concede the government is entitled to this money. You just think they have to proceed by restitution.
No, my position is they had a right to proceed as restitution. They have a right to proceed however they want to.
But it seems to me they also had a right to treat this as a tax deficiency. That's what it is.
Well, I disagree.
It's not like payment to the wrong person of a refund. They gave the refund to the taxpayer, and as a result, the taxpayer underpaid his taxes.
No, Judge. What happened was the taxpayer got the refund, didn't ask for the refund,
well,
got
it's
a refund.
It's a windfall. It's a windfall.
Right. And but that's unjust.
And so you're seeking to profit from a windfall.
No, that's unjust enrichment. These people go out and they pay all their bills.
Yes, it's unjust. Yes, your clients were unjustly enriched.
That's
and
right.
In addition to that, they have underpaid their taxes.
No. They paid the right amount of taxes, Judge.
They owe more taxes.
No, but the fact of the matter is that as of this time, Chapter 7 discharge in a bankruptcy proceeding says they don't owe the taxes anymore.
That's the question.
Well, that is the question.
I don't understand. What is the practical value of your rule? It looks like you're just trying to exploit a loophole. Because, of course, if the government hadn't made this mistake, the mistake in refund, then you and your clients would have had this non-dischargeable tax debt.
No, because if the government hadn't made a mistake, they wouldn't owe any taxes because they wouldn't have got a refund as a result of not getting...
No, but they'd be worse off. They wouldn't have this money. They would have paid it earlier.
No, Judge, what they would have done is they wouldn't have had that $6,000 approximately used to pay... claims which would have been dischargeable in a Chapter 7. What the situation the government wants to do is they want to say, well, this is not a 523, or I say, this is not a 523 discharge objection. There's been no determination filed that that this debt was not discharged. This is a debt. It's no different than going to you owe for the groceries at the grocery store. Somebody sends you money that you may or may not be entitled to. But in this particular case...
No, it is different, and there are all these cases which say that if you have been given an erroneous refund, you have a tax deficiency. It's not just unjust enrichment.
But
you have underpaid your taxes.
But the question is, Judge, is it a non-dischargeable debt?
What about this rebate-non-rebate distinction? Was that argued to... Judge Scott, and how should that distinction factor into any analysis?
I don't think that's the issue. The issue is that in 1984, if my memory is correct, the law got changed.
Right.
And it used to say that refunds were given the same treatment as the tax. And the Congress changed that law to reflect the refunds will only be given a same priority. And there's a big difference between priority and a big difference between dischargeability and having this, the refund.
I don't remember anything in your brief about the reason for the change having anything to do with this case.
Well, Judge, we dealt specifically.
I mean, it wasn't designed to affect bankruptcy, was it?
I think your argument was that under Section 507C of the Bankruptcy Code, the claim arising from the obligation,
correct,
is entitled to the same priority as a tax claim.
Correct.
But for purposes of dischargeability, it ought not be treated as if it were a tax claim. That's your argument, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And what's it based on?
Well, it's based on the change in statute, the change in the language that was issued.
But that change didn't have any reference to the situation in our case, did it?
Well, it makes a difference as to whether this is a priority or whether this has the same status as a tax. We're still talking about a refund issue here.
But do you think that change instead was designed to change those cases which the government cites that treat the mistaken refund case as a rebate that creates a tax obligation?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, they're talking about the Bleak case, and if that's the case, that court specifically indicated it was working on the prior language, the old language, not the new language of the statute. Yes, I think there has to be a reason. I would assume that Congress doesn't just rewrite these laws.
Did Congress overrule that case?
I think didn't have to overrule the case, it changed the law. It says that...
Well, if it changes the law, it means that case would be decided differently if it arose.
I believe it would be.
Is there legislative history to indicate that Congress...
There's no legislative history either way on this particular issue. But there is specific verbiage taken out. Before, you had the same status as a tax claim. Now you only have the same priority.
Didn't the Senate report indicate this was just a cosmetic change?
Well, it makes some reference
quote,
to...
Quote, a stylistic and clarifying change, unquote. What does that mean?
Codifying would indicate it's making, in my opinion, it's making some differences.
Clarifying.
Judge, just in summary, I would indicate to you that I think it's an issue of whether or not this particular tax situation falls within the 523A exception. And I submit to the court, and we've argued this in the briefs, that it does not. And they argue, for example, like a mortgage lien and a personal debt, they say there's two underlying claims. Well, if in fact there would have been security for this debt, yes. But in this particular case, the Chapter 7 discharge prevailed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Norman. Mr. Clark, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
It's our view that the court doesn't even need to reach Section 507C in this case because the IRS's claim is a claim for a tax, and the court's claim for a tax. And then
so well, what is your theory of what 507C did?
Well, there are situations to which 507C would apply, other types of erroneous refund. I mean, our position is that if the erroneous refund gives rise to a tax deficiency, then it's a claim for a tax. But there are some erroneous refunds that do not give rise to tax deficiencies, and I think 507C would apply in those situations. For example, in this court's decision in the O'Brien case, the erroneous refund in that case was not a rebate,
right.
Therefore did not give rise to a tax deficiency, although it did relate to a tax for a tax year. And I think Section 507C would directly apply in that case to ensure that the claim for that tax would be entitled to priority. If there are no further questions, I see my time.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Last